All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Monday on The Usual Suspects, and I hope y'all had a great weekend and everybody practiced social distancing, but socialized amongst the peoples. And now you're ready for a great 3 hours of The Suspects. Barry is coming to us live from his humble abode. Dell from the studio. Happy to have you all along as well. Fellas, what's going on?
What's up, Playboy?
All good, man. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I guess it would help if I turn on the booster on my microphone. But doing well, my friend. Doing well.
You know, excellent.
Another week, another step closer to going completely bat bleep crazy, but we're here. We're doing it.
Did I hear you had more technical problems?
Oh my God. It's been a nightmare. And I had to reach out to I've opened cases with both software companies that I use to do this, and they're free, so it's like, what are you going to do? But yeah, it's been a nightmare the last couple days. But we persevere and we get through it.
Is it karma, or was it definitely somebody else's fault that you have to blame because you are the Geek Squad genius IT guy?
I mean, I know you would expect me to be able to control everything that happens on the internet, but I can tell you that, unfortunately, Joel, I can't. So in this case, wouldn't say it's karma. I would say that it's more of a technical issues that beyond my control.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Just asking, because, you know, this all started after you always blamed me for everything IT, and then you couldn't connect when we were going to do our little chat.
Again, I can't control the internet, but I do know how to read emails and stuff, so I think there would be a slight difference.
Okay. Granado on tonight, huh?
Yeah, man. We already tested Skype, not that, you know, with the other issues I'm having, not that it's going to matter. I'm going to try something new tonight, but yeah, Granado tonight. Back-to-back had Jong last night, and that was fun, and got to reminisce, and you know, he said he's the thing he was most proud of in all of his years in radio was us and our show.
Yeah, he even tweeted that to us. Yeah, that was very nice.
Yeah, he said that, you know, things weren't always great, and he wishes he would have done a lot of things better with you and with us and with Trap and the way things. But he said, you know, with all the stuff that we overcame and how he did it, and he fought for the show and he fought for us. And so, yeah. He was very complimentary of us and you and the show and everything. It was really cool. It was great to catch up with him too, man. Hadn't seen him forever.
Yeah, what's he doing now?
Well, he's going to real estate school, but I guess that obviously slows down now because of the Rona. But he's looking at doing real estate.
Okay, all right. I saw you had some. I just followed up on Twitter, but I saw you had your girl Alice Little on.
Oh yeah, that was what was that, Friday or Saturday night? One of the two.
Someone tweeted out Friday. A picture with Barry's facial expressions when he hears Alice talk about the dungeon and whips and chains or something.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part about doing live streams is that guys can freeze the screen whenever they feel like it and create a funny post or you know how it goes on Twitch. Right. Same thing.
Oh, they did it for us when we.
Oh
did
yeah,
it
it's
live.
It's
yeah.
You know. Sometimes they're funny. That one was pretty funny. Sometimes they're not, but you know, because people can be rude. But yeah, it was. She was great. I mean, she was. You know, I mean, we've had her twice on the show now, so I told her.
Yep.
It was nice to be able to talk to her without FCC restrictions. But it really wasn't much different. You know, she was energetic and personable and intelligent, and you know, talked about sex.
Did she still sound like she was trying to sell you something on an infomercial? Yeah.
A little bit. But she's good, man. It was cool. How was your weekend? How's the dog recovering from surgery?
She's good. It's weird. She's still, you know, I'm skeptical because she still can't put any weight on it. And she still has to obviously get out and go to the bathroom. And we have to have her on a leash at all times, whether it be in the house. We set up just this big, big, big kennel. So she's got a lot of room.
But outside, she likes to be outside. So we set up one outside where she can sit in there and enjoy the weather and just hang out. But she still hasn't put any weight on the one leg. But she's good. She's functioning again and seems to be okay. But obviously puts a monkey wrench in anything we want to do because we're constantly keeping an eye on her. Cut my own hair this weekend. That went pretty well. I did Wild Thing at first because Lisa was so worried she had never done that before. She didn't want to do it. And I was like, look, I'm just at wit's end. I was going to see Apollo Men's Health on Saturday. I'm like, I'm not going out of the house looking like, just, you know, someone from like a roadie from Motley Crue. I'm like, right. I got to get rid of all this hair. So I was like, the least I can do is do the back and the sides. So I had bought a new clipper blade and it arrived in the mail. And I'm like, I'm just going to give this a shot. And I finally just said, I don't know what length this is, if it's good or if it's bad. I'm going to try it. And I went, oh, that's about what the haircut lady does anyway. So I did as much as I could. And then I said, Lisa, come in here. And she goes, oh, my God, you look like Charlie Sheen in Major League. I had done the sides and then as far to the back as I could without getting, because I couldn't see it. And she's like, you literally should just go with the full Major League. I'm like, you know, no one would see me. It'd be fine. But she did. She finished up the back and trimmed up the collar and everything. And so I was like, you know what? I could actually do this all the time. It's not that bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And she would still have to do it though, right?
I mean, she would still have to clean up the back that I can't see. Yeah, but the sides and everything like that are easy. So I got that out of the way. I did venture out. That was the Apollo Men's Health trip and a couple other things. And just again, crazy how many people are just out there, no masks, just giving it all a whirl.
Yeah.
So I'm not in for all that just yet, but.
Yeah, I went to the grocery store as I do every Saturday. And one thing I saw that kind of infuriated me was, look, I get it if you're an adult and you're not going to wear a mask. That's your dumbass decision, right? Like, that's right. Fine. But then I saw this lady walking into the store with no mask on, with two kids with no mask on. And I was like, you know, I know. Save all your texts and tweets. I don't care. Because I know that's not for them. It's for you. Okay, it works both ways. And I'm just thinking if your kids are going to go out in public right now, it'd probably be safe to err on the side of caution. But, you know, there are some people that are like, they're not taking my freedom. They're not taking my kids' freedom. I'm not going to stand for it. So, you know what? If your kid gets the Rona, well, now you know. That was your dumbass's fault.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Lisa and I were talking about it, and Taylor desperately – I was going to Home Depot. I was doing things for stuff around the – and Taylor desperately wanted to go, and Lisa's like, nope. We're just not doing it. She has a little mask, but even still, it's just not worth it. I go, I'm totally good with that. Yeah, I'll just run a whole bunch of errands at one time, and I'll wear a mask, and I'll take my chances. But I don't need the rest of the family getting out there too soon and getting in the middle of anything. So
yeah. Other thing I did this weekend was play in the ESPN 97.5.
Oh, did you get in
poker tournament? Yeah, I got the software figured out and fixed and. Got it up and running and joined. I barely joined in time. I had like 3 minutes to spare when I was texting Fred going, who's going to let me in? He's like, did you pay? I was like, yeah, I paid. I paid on Friday when I signed it up. He's like, I got you. And he got me in. And the goal, there was like 108 people, which is so badass. Jerry Bowe and Fred and Courtney, hats off and kudos to them for doing an amazing job on those tournaments. Then
yep.
With all, you know, a lot of the money going to charity. I think some people won money, but then others, you know, the rest of it would go.
Dr. Dre on 290 finished eighth, donated all of his winnings and the entry fee to charity. And I said, and he's got a lot going on that I'm not going to put his business out there, but he's got a lot going on personally. And yet he still did it. I said, commend you, Dre. That's an outstanding move.
I think Fred ended up second again out of the four times he plays second twice because, you know, old Fred, old degenerate Fred. But my goal was. I was like, all right, I hadn't played in a while. I don't play all that often, but when I do, I try to take it serious. And so I told the wife, don't bother me. But goal was finish top half. So I wanted to finish inside of 50, and I finished 48. And I was surprised because when I joined, I just said I had my screen name is ESPN Barry, just so people would know. Because if I just did Barry, they'd be like, is that Barry? So I did it. And to their credit, only one person made a lame-ass Barry is funny joke the entire time that I was there. And I was there for several hours. And I don't even know who it was, but somebody was like, Barry isn't funny enough to have a straight, because on one of the hands. And they beat me. And then about, I don't know, 30 minutes later, they got bounced after I took half their money. So it was sweet justice. Sweet, sweet justice. So
you had your own Sam Rubios following you around? Is that right?
No, no. That, it was just somebody talking trash. That happens at the poker table. It was, yeah.
Not real hate then. Okay.
No, not real hate. It was just talking trash. And I think he did that. And then about three or four times, I ended up either beating him or running him out of the pot, and then a little later, gone. Not because of me. Somebody else kicked him out, or, you know, outed him. But it was fun, man. I hope they do some more of that. That's a really cool tournament that those three put together. So props to them.
Yeah, absolutely. As we've been saying all along, props to those guys. Props to all you suspects and ESPN listeners that got involved and made a difference, man, and had some fun. That's fantastic. And speaking of that, that's what we're going to do today on the suspects on a Monday. Obviously, coming off the last two episodes, the latest two episodes of The Last Dance, we'll have Bill Wennington, who was on three championship teams with the Chicago Bulls, going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour, and that should be great to catch up with Big Billy, who's also a Chicago Bulls radio broadcaster now, but a guy that had a really, really good college career, won three titles in the NBA, and was along for the ride and all of the side show that was going on that we witnessed again last night with the Bulls, so that'll be great. And we'll have some fun with that. And obviously, we should probably start right off the top getting our thoughts on the latest two. Did you watch the last the episode last night?
I certainly did. I watched both of them.
So we've got plenty that we can get to with that. Yeah. That should be great. And, of course, you guys can join in, too. I tweeted it out earlier that he's going to be on the show. So if you guys have questions you'd like to ask him, you can fire him our way, and we'll see if they're good enough. If we like them, we'll throw them at Bill. But that should be great. He is a great dude. I don't know if you saw it, but he did an interview on SportsCenter after, I think, the first two episodes. And, like, in his man cave or, like, man cave office, he has just this skeleton, this, like, horror film skeleton. And he puts, like, regular clothes and hats on it and stuff. And I think Hannah Storm was like, "Who's that behind you?" And he goes, "Who, what?" "Oh, he doesn't have a name. He's just there." He goes, "Halloween's my favorite holiday, I think, so it's good." And
nice.
I want to give him a hard time. I want to ask him about his facial hair, because when he played for the Bulls, it was just simple goatee and things like that. And if you notice in the documentary, he's got like the mutton chop Fu Manchu with a triangle flavor saver under his lip. And I'm like, I want to know if he's the Picasso of facial hair all of a sudden doing it to himself, or what he's got going on there. But he is a funny dude, so it should be fun catching up with him to start the week. That should be a good time. Also got confirmation Shane Battier, the ex-Rocket's going to join us this week too. We'll schedule a time for him, so catch up with him as well. So we got some, and you got Q Demps coming in, what, tomorrow?
Tuesday, Quentin Demps is going to join us and talk Texans, DeAndre Hopkins trade, Bill O'Brien, Bob McNair.
That's great.
All that. He's open book. He said he'd answer it all, so yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, that should be good. We're lining up a good week for you guys, and it always centers around you. So if you want to join the show, 713-780-3776. That's our HRNP listener line. You can call that number. You can text that number. Hit us up on Twitter, at Barry is Funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, at DellV2, as Dell has the first hour of the show. And before we go to the break, I do want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I mentioned it to you. I stopped in and saw the people at Apollo on Saturday. They are just the nicest people in the world. You can sit there and chat with them all day because they take care of you, but they do it in a relaxed atmosphere. If you are just trying to get in an overall better quality of health and you want some work done to try and figure out when they do a body composition analysis or an HGH peptide therapy, or you could quite simply just have said, "Look, I'm done with everything else. Take my testosterone levels because I need to check and see if I need some help. And if I do, I'm only coming to you." It's Apollo Men's Health. They do traditional testosterone therapy. They also do cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy. It's a treatment that reduces your weekly visits but maintains that overall wellness in a more convenient way. With everything going on with this COVID-19, You don't want to be going to the doctor's office once a week and stopping in. You don't have to if you go with this pellet testosterone therapy, and it's available at Apollo Men's Health. They offer everything that you need, and it's all centered around giving you the best quality of life, because your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. 832-664-9966 or go to their website, apollomh.com, to book your first appointment. Most major insurance accepted. Discount for military personnel and first responders. Check them out. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Mortgage. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Suspects! Barry and Joel along with Dell as Nick has the day off again, and we are kicking it around with you guys till 4. Are we... broke the ice a little bit, but of course, everybody talking about, with nothing really sports related to get into, The Last Dance, and episodes 5 and 6 were last night. 5 centered around the Dream Team, 6 the run against Charles Barkley and the Suns in what, 93,
and the so, Knicks, right? I mean, it was really kind of centered around Knicks. Both, yeah, Knicks and Suns. And
so, give me your takeaways. I guess we'll start there.
Episode 5 was what I had been waiting for. It was, I feel like, almost all Jordan. It was shoe-related. I mean, big bomb drop that he loved Adidas, wanted to be with Adidas.
Yep.
And that Nike was kind of an afterthought. And at the time, the market for Nike was pretty much track shoes. And I found all that to be fascinating and interesting. And that's what I came for, was that stuff. So to finally get some of that was pretty cool. It also let me realize that Jordan is still a spin machine. I mean, you know, the whole Republicans buy shoes and the gambling, and he did his best, even in this documentary, to minimize, I think, what was really going on. I don't think books are written and all that stuff if it's just a harmless, no big deal thing when you look at the people he associated with. So that was kind of interesting, and you got to see a little more about him and the team, and how he didn't like Isaiah, which I was surprised that he just kind of came out and said it. Look, I respect him, but I don't like that dude.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool that he just owned
him. You give him credit for saying he's the second best point guard behind Magic in the game. So at least he didn't, you know, completely like draw the blind eye and just say he couldn't play. But, you know, he definitely holds grudges. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah. But, so, yeah, the shoe thing was really cool. I really enjoyed that. But you know me.
Yeah,
I like
it was neat.
So.
Well, and you know what? And I don't think people paid enough attention to the fact that when he said, hey, look, I've got a way that I'm going to cover up the Reebok logo anyway, and everybody thought, well, is he going to tape it up, or is he not going to wear the warm-up? And just – who I don't know if he had help or if that was just him, but just the subtle draping of the flag over the warm-up so you couldn't see the logo was just brilliant.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, lots of takeaways for me. I think the one thing was, and again, I've been blessed to be in situations where I've seen him gamble. I've played golf with him. I know his competitive fire. But the whole quarters thing, and by the way, that is his little, they called it was like his office. We can ask Bill Weddington about it. But that was his own locker room that I told you about. He had his own desk in there. He had his changing area, those security guys. Only he was allowed in there, unless he, you know, personally said come in. But that quarters game, I'll tell you what, bro. If you don't think there's a gambling addiction as well as competitiveness, that quarters game should spell it all out for you.
Yeah. Did you ever play quarters in high school or junior high or whatever?
Oh God,
pitch
yes.
quarters,
absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. That's a fun ass game, man. We used to do that for hours in school, out of school, during the summer.
You're talking about the drink.
But yeah, you're right.
I played quarters, the drinking game, but I also
No. I'm talking about pitching quarters. That was man. We did that all the time. That was a lot of fun. But you kind of get some, if you really paid attention, you got some more insight into, you know, you always hear about Jordan's competitiveness and relentlessness and all that. But even with the security guards, he asks for the quarters back when they're done. Did you notice
that? He sure did. Yep.
I'm like, bro, you're Michael Jordan. Let that man have that 50 cents. But he's like, give my quarters back. Because he lost. That's the kind of guy he is. Is if he beats you, he's taking your money. But if he loses and you were using his money, he's getting it back because he's a sore loser. Like, but I mean, and I mean sore loser in a way in which a guy like Michael Jordan hates losing. He's so competitive that if he loses, it just burns him up. Mm-hmm. And so rather than just be like, oh, good game, you know, keep the 50 cents. He's like, nah, man, give my 50 cents back. You beat me. We wasn't happy about it.
But again, it's
really interesting, just that little nuance of it.
It's the whole grudge thing that fuels him. I mean, right? He's also pissed off he lost, so he wants his quarters back.
Yep.
It's like it's almost like taking his ball and going home, but it's not. But, you know, I lived through the 92 finals. I was an intern with the Blazers. They flew us to all the road games there. I was there for this shoulder shrug game and everything about it. We had heard leading up to it that there was some animosity between Michael and Clyde. At least he finally opened up and just kind of spilled on it. But the fact of the matter is, Clyde didn't do anything to warrant that except for just play a hell of a season of basketball and put his name on the map by playing, you know, great for a team that obviously had a hell of a season. But if you look at it too, when you talk about the subtleties, when they go to midcourt to start that series, they never shook hands, those two. Everybody else did. But you could even see there was that uncomfortable kind of look from both of them that it wasn't good between them. Now, I tweeted out before the show, there's a picture that we took in the clubhouse after golfing, Clyde, Michael, me, and Van Chancellor. And I'm like, everybody got along because Clyde didn't. You know, Clyde obviously is competitive as anybody. Clyde wanted to win the series.
Uh-huh.
Clyde wanted to get the best of him. But Clyde didn't bring that on and have any, like, like a personal issue. Michael made the whole thing personal and then just elevated his game because of it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, man. Different dudes that way.
By the way, just want to – because somebody texted just now and asked about it, and we got several tweets as soon as it happened. But they played Black Sheep, This or That, our show opener. And love that the suspects immediately, that's the first thing you think of. It's a good feeling, dude, when that song is kind of associated with the show now forever, right? When people hear it, the first thing they'll think of is The Usual Suspects. It's really cool. Like when I hear a few songs, I always think of The Jungle because Jim Rome played the same songs, Up All Night. There was Welcome to the Jungle, and then there was another one. And those three songs, anytime I hear it, I always think of the jungle.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of cool that the suspects shouted us out. It almost
brought a tear to my eye
of us.
During the show when they played it, Clarence was the first one to tweet it and say, anybody else think of The Usual Suspects and just waiting for Joel to say, what up, H-Town? And I was like, oh, my God. That's when you kind of feel like you're doing it right because now you're right. The song is associated with the show. They had the localized element of that we added with the What Up H-Town. And the fact that they thought of us, that to me, it brought a smile to my face. I was like, that's awesome.
Pretty cool. Really, really cool. Several people had reached out, hit me up, and was like, oh, that was really neat to see that. I thought the music was much better in episode 5 as well. I really liked it. Episode 5 was my favorite episode, and these two back-to-back I really enjoyed. I mean, you had Kobe. You had Jordan and Kobe. You had Jordan and just in these two episodes. You had Jordan versus Kobe, Jordan versus Isaiah, kind of, you know, when it came to the Dream Team. Jordan and Clyde, Jordan and Ewing.
Barkley.
I mean, and by the way – yeah, Barkley, Jordan and Barkley. And by the way – how many big dunks does John Starks have in the playoffs? It seems like that dude I mean, he wasn't the greatest ball player ever, but man, that dude could elevate and dunk on fools. He's just crazy.
That one that he has over Horace Grant with Jordan coming behind Grant, the one was like the Vince Carter all the way in elbow into the rim dunk, but in a game. I mean, that's how high he elevated when he threw
ridiculous.
That thing down. And it was just nasty.
And he had one on the Rockets too, right? I think he had one on the Rockets as well that was nasty.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember.
But definitely that Knicks team was built for speed. They had, you know, had when we talk about role players, they had and nastiness. Starks would get in your face. Greg Anthony, now a broadcaster, was a guy that if he had to, he'd lay you on your ass, and they showed that where he knocked Michael down in one of them. And then you had the big guys. Yeah, Oakley and Mason. Charles Smith,
Ewing,
who doesn't get a lot of credit for that, but he was that type of player. Ewing, obviously, was a physical player. They had a lot of guys, man, that seriously could rattle your cage but could also put it in the basket, and that's what made them such a force in the East to be reckoned with. And so that was that was very cool to see. The Charles element to me that, I think gets lost in all of this is whenever they showed the intense scenes of that series, and that was a better series than I think people remember, but Charles was unlike Michael. Michael was always super intense. All the Bulls super intense. They looked kind of worried. Charles, win or lose, would walk off the court with a smile on his face. When they went to that third overtime and met at center court, he was laughing as he was talking to Michael because he had that ability to just say, I don't think anybody's better than me. I'm gonna kick your ass tonight. But he did everything that he does just like he does everything in life, with kind of that approach of it's still just basketball and I'm having fun. This is better than a job. And so it was cool to see how he handled everything.
I liked Barkley's statement about, you know, I didn't think there was anybody on the planet better than me until then, you know, until he faced Michael in that series and Michael beat him. But up until that point, he always felt like there's nobody in this league better than me. But, you know, and you heard the same thing with the Dream Team practices when they was like, okay, he's the alpha. You know, when Magic was giving it to him. I mean, that's just, I guess, the kind of guy. And that's what I'm excited to ask our guest at 2 o'clock, Bro Whittington, and see, was he always on? Was he always like that? Was he the alpha? Because when you're dealing with a basketball team in the NBA, they're all alpha males. I don't care if you're the 12th guy on the bench. You're still an alpha because you're in the NBA, and that's like the pinnacle. So I just wonder what it was really like for those guys to have to swallow their pride and be the third, fourth, fifth best player on the team with a guy like that. Uh-oh. Did I lose you?
Seems like you lost Joel.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. That was okay, cool. Well, look, we're past due for a break anyway, so we'll jump out for a second and let Joel see if he can get this issue resolved. And we will be right back with more Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for seconds. I don't know what happened, but I'm back. Dell, myself, and Barry, we were talking about The Last Dance. I was going to throw this out for you, Barry, because I don't know if people realize this or not. You know, a lot of people made the comparison of MJ and Tiger as being the two most iconic sports figures of all time, and you know, all these different things. The one thing that I was getting at with the grudges and all,
who were those people?
I mean, I think Ali obviously should be in there too, but SportsCenter did a big thing on last night. Scott Van Pelt, Michael Wilbon, Charles himself said that he thought Tiger and Charles the greatest at their sport of all time, and the greatest of his lifetime. And I'm like, you lived through Muhammad Ali too, so I was waiting on that.
Yeah.
But I'll say
you got Jackie Robinson, you've got Babe Ruth.
I think Charles was all about that. He personally saw and experienced Tiger and MJ. But I, like I said, Barkley's a huge boxing fan. He lived through Ali. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't ignore Muhammad Ali.
No.
But what I wanted to bring up is on the grudge point, and they're both similar in Tiger and in Michael, but Michael literally still has a problem with Charles. Like, Charles tried to rectify.
Really?
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with when they played against each other. When Charles was on TNT doing what he's paid to do, and Charles and I had a long conversation about it because I thought to some degree he was sensationalizing it for TV a little bit. But what had happened was they asked Charles honestly about Michael Jordan as an owner slash general man when he was getting involved in player moves and things like that. And Charles was very critical of Michael and was very honest. And he's like, I'm not doing the fans or myself justice if I'm not honest in what I see and what I do. He goes, but Michael took it personally, and now he was done with me. He wasn't going to talk to me anymore. It was basically he was shutting me out. And I think that they've crossed paths a few times where they've exchanged some pleasantries. It may have softened a bit, but for quite a while there, I know there's still an issue, but for quite a while there, it was like, you are dead to me kind of thing, where he was livid at Charles. And Charles was like, look, TNT's paying me to be an analyst. I have to analyze what I see. And I'm sorry, he hasn't been good. And Michael got ticked off.
Well, I mean, yeah. But you know what, though? Good for Charles because that's your credibility. That's your integrity on the line if you just, you know, kiss Michael Jordan's ass because y'all are friends. So, I mean, you know, if I was Jordan, would I feel the same way? Probably. But at the same time, got to respect the man for doing his job. And look, let's be real, Joel. Jordan has had less than flattering things to say about a lot of people, including teammates. I mean, I still remember, I don't know what episode it was, when he's like, I don't want Bill Cartwright shooting the ball. No way. Like, come on,
man. Or the
man.
Horace Grant thing. Even if Horace Grant denies it, he thinks Horace Grant told Sam Smith everything for the book.
But even if you believe that Bill Cartwright is a bad shooter, and you've told him that to his face in the locker room, not something you go on a documentary and just flippantly say, ha, Bill Cartwright sucked. I didn't want him having the ball. Because that's essentially what you're saying, is that he sucked. And so if you're going to get mad at Barkley, well, maybe, you know, sweep your own porch first, because that's – Bill Cartwright should be mad at Michael Jordan. Not that Jordan would care, but he should feel the same way. It's a little hypocritical, but I get it too, because I don't think him and Bill Cartwright were as close as Charles and Michael are.
Well, but he wanted to win. And look, he wasn't going to ever shy away from the fact that when it came down to winning time, he wasn't, you know, I don't want to say off limits. That was just a different zone in which, quite honestly, he may love you to death as a person, as a teammate, you know, would take you on his team. But when it came down to winning time, if you took a shot that he didn't have confidence in you making, or that was a bad shot because there was time on the clock or it didn't get into the hands of him or someone that he believed in, he was going to rip you a new one, because that's how competitive and how important winning was to him. And so, I mean, I think that's part of it too. And we can ask Bill Wennington that as well. Like, being on that team, I mean, is that something that crossed your mind, that you didn't want to cross Michael by taking a shot he didn't want you to take, or doing something that he didn't feel like was going to help them win? Because that was basically just everybody acknowledging that's just MJ being MJ.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know, it's great. And then I think the other thing that I found interesting was the, you know, him saying that laying on the couch and kind of the conversation he had. Because on the one hand, I get it. And on the other hand, I mean, dude, you're Michael Jordan. You know, I get that it's taxing and tiring, and, you know, guys like Prince and Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan and that, you never get a quiet private moment and I'm sure it gets old, but I was kind of surprised to hear him say, I'm sick of it. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm walking away. Like, this is it. I've had it. Like, you know, if you went back, it's kind of like what I've always said about Dave Tepper, what he told me about radio. If you went back and asked Michael Jordan the year before he went to North Carolina, or the year that he was drafted, that you'll be the king of the world. You'll be the most recognized face on the planet, but you give up some of your privacy. You'll be rich beyond your means. You'll have the most popular. I mean, you will change pop culture forever. You will change, you know, all those things. Would you do it? Of course he'd say yes.
Sure.
Of course. But, you know, so I think – but it's hard, and I get it. I'm not, like, upset that Michael Jordan thought that. It just surprised me a little bit. But I could see where that would be exhausting, where it's just like, all right, I can't do this anymore.
I mean,
this
honestly,
is just too much.
Sure. But, you know, but again, they always say fame has its price. And mm-hmm. we see it all the time with rock bands and celebrities and everything else. That, you know, that's the price of fame sometimes. But you know, the thing that was really weird to me, too, was how many cigars he smoked. And smoked all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And smoked day of game and everything like that. And I know a lot of those guys are big fans of Cohibas and all the big cigar names. But to me, I get it when you're golfing or when you're gambling or doing things like that. But, like, on game days and in downtime at the hotels, and I'm thinking, just for your lungs, no matter what kind of world-class athlete you are, that was crazy right. to think that, you know, he was smoking cigars all the time. And then the other thing was
wild.
Just the whole Carolina political race when he was a grant that he wouldn't support, although he did make a financial contribution. That was the biggest knock on Michael throughout his entire playing career mm-hmm. and celebrity mm-hmm. is that he's never been willing to make a statement. Support who he wanted to support. The fact that he even stood by his remark that saying Republicans buy tennis shoes too, and it seemed like it was more about shoe sales and his brand than it was making a true statement for the people and backing, like Ali did. Ali, obviously, with you know not being drafted and not going into the service and doing all the things that he did and the statements that he made his presence felt not just as a boxer, but just, you know, human rights activist and all these different things socially. And Michael has always steered clear of it, and he's gotten beat up for it, and probably deservedly
yeah.
so. But, you know, that's who he is.
Not that I would know, or, you know, for that matter, you would know, but I think when you have a guy like that, that transcends race, and has the ability to do so, and you're African American and you're looking for someone like Michael Jordan to be a leader for your community and to kind of cross those racial boundaries and lines and express and get the message to people, right? Like, let them know what's important to your cause. And if he kind of declines to do that, it's pretty disappointing because he's your hero. He's your idol. He's the guy. I mean, my God, there was a commercial. I want to be like Mike. Everybody yep. wanted to be like Mike. And that was legitimately something that was – so you had all these young African-American men and women that looked up to Michael Jordan. And to feel like he kind of alienated his race or turned his back on his race. And that's, again, I'm saying feel like or you get the sense that that's what it was. And Barack Obama even said as much. And they're the ones that, you know, in their mind, they're the ones that built him up. Mm-hmm. I could see where – that's something that is going to be difficult to shake because people won't let you forget it. I certainly understand it. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm not saying whether I agree or disagree. I'm just saying I kind of understand why he got so much backlash because he did choose to be very neutral. And even in jest on a bus with a bunch of people that are, you know, friends and teammates and so forth, you're Michael Jordan. You and I say something like that, it's no big deal. Michael Jordan says, even when – And I think it was episode 6 when he said only person that could give me these tickets is God or something like that. Or thank God. He goes, I am God. And he goes, no, don't put that in there. Don't do that. Again, you know, he's joking, obviously. But, you know, if we weren't there and the camera wasn't there and this, that, and the other, who's to say that that doesn't become secondhand information that ends up in a book that Michael Jordan thinks he's God? You know what I mean? So it could be the same thing. So do I believe that Jordan said that in jest? Probably, yeah, I do. But unfortunately, there wasn't video, and people believe what they want to believe.
Yeah, and again, I mean, even LeBron has made a lot of statements. And I think because, just like the Kobe thing, I mean, there's a lot of truth to the fact. I had a hard time believing Michael at Kobe's funeral because what I had seen and what I knew was that Michael didn't take a liking to the fact that Kobe was trying to emulate everything he did, from his speech pattern to the licking of the lips and the tongue to the shots themselves. And you could see that in that footage of the All-Star, in the things he was saying early on. But to hear that from, you know, several sources, look, as it, you know, as he gave Kobe his number and as they talked more, sure, he got, you know, he thought Kobe was a nuisance sometimes by how many times he called. But after a while, he took a liking to the fact that this guy was so committed to trying to be like him that it was kind of an honor. It was flattering to him, and he took a liking to it. But otherwise, that, again, goes back to this whole competitive fire thing where he didn't want anybody to do anything that, you know, that anybody could say was like him or compared to him or anything else. And the only real knock, obviously, the gambling – and then the fact that he wasn't willing to take a stand and make a statement, politically or otherwise, were the biggest knocks on him. But the other thing that kept flashing into my mind when he quit in 98 and he came back, and obviously the Wizards run was basically kind of a wash for the most part. But you think about when he missed 64 games with the foot, he sat out 2 years with baseball. He actually probably retired way sooner than he should before the last vile comeback. I mean, you look at it, and we talk about stats and numbers and things like that. Boy, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of numbers that are missing from his final number, from final stats that could have been there had he not done all of this, where he missed huge chunks of time from the NBA that people miss when they start calculating, why isn't he the all-time leading scorer? Why isn't he this? Why isn't he that? I kept thinking about that. So.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good point, too.
And I brought up when you mentioned the whole Be Like Mike thing, that the crazy thing is that the ad agency exec that tried to negotiate a deal with Disney, and they wanted, instead of Be Like Mike, they wanted to use, from the Jungle Book, they wanted to use I Want to Be Like You, which was the famous song from that Jungle Book movie. And Disney wanted too much money. They wanted $350,000 or something like that. So he actually wrote the lyrics to Be Like Mike on a cocktail napkin in a bar while he tried to get it as close to I Want to Be Like You as he could without any kind of infringement. And then it just took off, and it couldn't have been more perfect. And now it's iconic in the way. And the only reason why he did it was because they weren't going to pay $350,000 just for the rights to the song to use as part of an overall commercial.
Pretty crazy. Isn't it amazing how that stuff happens? And like the guy that, that came up with Air Jordan, like, yeah. You know, you figure that there's this team of genius marketing guys, and but it was just one dude that was like, well, they've got Air, and it's Jordan, so let's just call it Air Jordan. And everybody was probably like, sounds gimmicky, but whatever. And then moved on, right? Like, it's amazing when you – it's also really cool to get to see and hear how some of this stuff that you just grew up with, that's part of your history as a kid, how all that developed. So, really cool.
Yep. So I think everybody's enjoying it. It's subtle when the cuss words come in, and I think a lot of people aren't expecting them sometimes, but I like it. They keep it real that way too. So plenty of stuff we can discuss with Bill Wennington. Again, Bill Wennington's going to join us hopefully at around 2 o'clock. He was on the last three Bulls championship teams. We'll get him to probably give a biased opinion of what would have happened had the Rockets and Bulls hypothetically actually played out what would have happened in 94 and 95. But, you know, people forget Bill Wennington had a hell of a college career. He was drafted number one, first round, 16th overall by the Dallas Mavericks after going to a Final Four with a St. John's team that had him, Mark Jackson, Chris Mullin, and Walter Berry. So a really good college team. And he's in the Canadian Basketball Hall of Fame because he was born in Montreal and his first love was hockey, but he had size 13 feet growing up and they couldn't get skates to fit him.
That's crazy, man.
So lots of cool stuff to catch up with Bill Wennington. Should be fun when he joins us at the top of the hour. And of course, always room for you to join the show, 713-780-3776. That's the HRNP listener line. Call that number, text that number, hit us on Twitter at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Before we go to the break, I do want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. I've been telling you about this. They're still doing it. Minor repairs for free. Fitz Roofing has everybody still working. They want to keep everybody employed, but they're looking for things for their guys to do. So if you call 832-521-3001, they're going to come to you at no charge. They're going to give you an inspection. If it's minor work, they're probably just going to do it for free to show you how committed they are to the people of Houston, whether times are good or bad. They're going to be there for you. And it's just another reason that you should support the Fitz family, because they love being in Houstonian, Houstonians helping people in Houston. They got an A-plus rating on the Better Business Bureau, 5-star ratings on Facebook and Home Advisor. If you need anything done with your roof, there's nowhere else to go but Fitz Roofing. Check them out also online, FITZroofing.com. But I'm telling you, give them a call, 832-521-3001. They'll come to you, do a free no-obligation inspection, and tell you what they can do to help you with any roof issue you might have. Simply put, they are the best in the business doing it for Houston, because Fitz Roofing is making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back wrapping up hour number one, three-hour show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Appreciate you taking us on the go wherever you may be in the big city on a Monday as we get ready to have a fun day. Talk a little Last Dance with Bill Wennington, who was on all those Bulls teams. We were talking and just kind of wrapping up our thoughts on the Last Dance. A lot of people got very sentimental about seeing Kobe Bryant. I don't know if you did or not. Like I said, my takeaway was more the mic'd up stuff where Jordan showed you what I had always thought, which was he kind of was just going to squash another kind of like challenger to the throne. You know, it, and early on it just seemed like he wanted to send a message and put Kobe in his place. But I don't know that I got sentimental. Obviously, when you think about it deeply and you realize Kobe's gone and gone too soon and it's awful, but I just felt like it was – on both sides, it was a fitting piece to the puzzle, and also to have Kobe finally admit, look, yeah, everything I did, I tried to copy him, I watched him, I learned from him, I asked questions of him. I thought it was just great, you know, basketball information.
Yeah, it was cool because, like you said, you knew, you know, Kobe wanted to be like Mike, that was his idol, but how much separation was there? And I had always heard, or I guess I had heard that Jordan didn't really take to it and like it, but apparently he did. You even mentioned, you know, at the funeral, you didn't really believe the sincerity, but based on what we saw in the documentary, he and look, Kobe, you know, to his credit, talked about it too. And I loved the statement. And I think it speaks volumes about Kobe as a person too, but I love the statement of, you know, don't compare us, because without Mike, there is no me. He taught me everything I do is I learned from Mike. So, pretty cool that he would make that kind of generalized, you know, statement.
Well, and when he said, yo, you know, people come to me and they're like, you know, who would win one-on-one, you or Mike? And when he got into all that, I mean, I thought that was also fitting of what you and I have talked about multiple times and I've been pretty passionate about, which is I hate the fact that it's limited to two. It's either LeBron or Michael. And we talked about some of the guys that were left out. Kobe should never be left out. Whether you love the Lakers or hated him, or loved or hated him, five championships alone and the way he played his game and the fact that he did do a ton of stuff like Michael and had that killer instinct, that dude was, you know, he deserves to be in the conversation for sure. So I thought that was something that – I think that's something that people get lost in. I just kind of was rewinding and watching some of episode 5, but you had mentioned how you really liked the whole shoe thing with Jordan, but the thing that was great was the whole New York game where he finally admits what you and I talked about. And I've said, I could never hoop in Jordans because they weren't comfortable. And for him to say that he wore the ones for that game in New York and then his feet were bleeding at the end, he wouldn't change at halftime because he had such a good game going. But to point out how much better the technology was with the shoes that he was wearing in 98 than the ones that he was wearing that night in New York was just hilarious to me because it's so true.
Yeah, pretty funny that he pointed that out. I thought the same thing, and then I'm thinking, man. And he didn't take him off till he was off the court. He wasn't about to take him off and show that he had, you know, that his feet were bleeding and stuff like that. But the other thing I noticed, and I mean, I knew this, but the way he did his socks was weird. What was that? Why did it just look like it was like a weird, like they were like five layers thick or something? I don't know. It looked weird.
No, so what he did was, because at the time, and being a ball boy working in Milwaukee too, you know, they had socks for the players, but they weren't like it is now where you can get the no-shows, the lows, the court, the calf length, or the highs, whatever. You know, there's all these different variations of socks. They gave you one standard sock. So what he would do is he'd pull it all the way up, and then to, like, get rid of a lot of the excess on how high it would go, he'd double it up. So it's hard to explain, but he would, you know, grab, like, the middle of, say, you pulled it all the way up to your knee, and then he'd grab the middle and pull the middle all the way down to his ankle and then kind of fold under and pull back up so that the stripes were gone. He liked just the white appearance of the sock. He didn't want stripes on it. And a lot of them, like when I was with Milwaukee, they had white with the three green stripes for the players. Mm-hmm. And Michael was the first one that said, no, I've always played with white socks. That's all I want. So to hide the stripes, he would do this kind of like fold under and pull back up so that it did look like he had six pairs on, but it just hid the stripes. And the other thing that I don't know that a lot of people caught in the episodes, but has always been not just a myth, it's a truth. From the time he got the Bulls, because he and his family were very religious too, was that they did not like the color red. So he wore Carolina practice shorts every night under every game shorts that every time he put Bull stuff on, through at least through the early years, he always had a pair of Carolina shorts underneath him.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so there's other interesting stuff. If you want more interesting stuff about Michael Jordan, the Bulls, and The Last Dance, Bill Winnington is scheduled to come up next. That should be a good conversation as you get a little insight into the documentary and Michael Jordan and being on that team and a whole lot more. So that's hour one in the books. Hour two straight ahead with Bill Winnington. A whole lot more of The Suspects. Don't go anywhere. And before we go to the break, I do want to tell you about the good people at Infuse Energy. I've been telling you about them for a long time. Josh Pesikoff and his staff do a fantastic job here in the Houston area of making sure if you need energy, they take care of you with the best rate and the best deal they possibly can. Check them out for yourself. Call 844-INFUSE2, 844-463-8732. Or you can log on to InfuseEnergy.com. But better yet, call them because you're going to get a human being on the phone, not an automated system. They're going to ask you as many questions as you ask them, and they're going to pinpoint where you use energy the most, when you use it the least, and the best rate and plan they can give you. You mentioned ESPN 97.5. You get a $25 bill credit right off the top. They're going to take care of you like they've taken care of so many suspects that have gotten their lowest bills and their best customer service since they signed up with Infuse Energy. Simply put, it's affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. And a company that has the best customer service ratings in the business, they got a 5 out of 5 star rating from the Public Utilities Commission of Texas. It's the best you can get. They also offer 100% green energy at your fingertips. Check them out. Infuse energy into your life.
ESPN 97.5.